I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's time for All Things Political. This hour with John McCormack. He's senior writer at the Weekly Standard, has been our guest many times. He's a Wisconsin native from Baldwin, Wisconsin. We have a lot to talk about. Most national polls are showing that there is a substantial lead for Hillary Clinton. The Washington Post today is saying that states that were in lean Republican are changing now. The Washington Post moving today Nevada, where Trump had shown surprising strength for much of this year, from toss-up to lean Democratic. They are moving Utah from lean Republican to toss-up, as the independent candidate Evan McMullen is doing quite well there. And finally, they're adding Texas to the list of competitive states, rating it as lean Republican. David Axelrod has said, "I don't know any consultant on either side who privately believes Donald Trump is going to win this election." We'll ask John what he thinks. What happens if you spend a month telling your supporters the election is rigged? Do they even bother to vote? The Weekly Standard has thorough analyses of the Senate races, and they have an interesting piece on what is the most crucial Senate race. The Standard says it is Nevada. The Republican candidate is Brigadier General Joe Heck. He is the only Republican, they write, with a chance of capturing a Democratic seat. And we'll talk about that. We'll look at Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois. Did I say Illinois? So we'll talk about that. Donald Trump gave his closing argument speech in Gettysburg. We can talk about the Al Smith dinner, in case you saw that, and whatever else you'd like to discuss. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we always like to read your comments, and I think we have some already, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, John. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Would you agree with David Axelrod's comments? Do you know any consultant who privately believes Donald Trump is going to win this election?
I don't. I don't know anyone. And if you look at the polling models right now, you know, they still give him a chance, but the chance is very small. 538.com, widely respected site run by Nate Silver, gives him a 1 in 8 chance, you know, which isn't nothing. I mean, most people wouldn't play Russian roulette if you had an 8-round revolver. You know, other sites like the New York Times Upshot give Trump more like a 1 in 20 chance of winning, only a 1 in 20 chance. I think it could even be worse than that. And the reason I would say that is that all these polling models, you know, they don't factor in the news and the facts about the two candidates. They simply look at the polls, and so a 6 or 7 point gap in the national polls is something that theoretically could be closed, but now that the debates are over, you know, that Trump has been acting in a certain way, kind of going, being unhinged in the final 2 weeks and not giving any sign that he even wants to pretend to act presidential. It seems to me that the cake is already baked, but I do have to say I've been continually surprised in this presidential race of how little Trump has had to do to close the gap. You know, just think back to August after he got in that fight with the family of the fallen soldier. You know, he ended up going to Mexico, you know, didn't get into any fight with the Mexican government, and he did some outreach to African-American churches, and lo and behold, he was basically tied in the polls. You know, I think it's a little bit too late in the game for another rebound like that to happen, especially in the wake of the debates and this lewd video that came out. But again, you never know.
You never know. You do have to ask, though. I think it's a legitimate question, and I wonder what you think happens when Donald Trump spends a month telling his supporters the election is rigged. What effect does that have on voters? Do you even vote if you feel it's rigged? Why vote?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely undermining him. If he wants to win himself or even, you know, be competitive, it does probably have the impact of depressing turnout. I haven't read any real in-depth study on this. I don't think we have a really great case study of someone saying it's rigged in this manner. You know, the problem isn't that Trump is, some have defended him, some on his team have said, oh, he's just talking about maybe having a recount in a place where there's a very, very close vote, you know, something like Minnesota in 2008, the Senate race there, or Florida in 2000. But if you really listen to Trump, you know, it seems like he's laying the groundwork to sort of challenge the legitimacy of any election, no matter how big a loss is. So I think that is really kind of outside the bounds of normal political discourse, and it doesn't help Trump, and it's not good for the country.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder what's going on with him, and maybe it's hard to get inside his mind here, but in the Gettysburg speech that he gave on Saturday this week, he had a 100-day action plan to make America great again. It's very lengthy. It's a contract with American voters. Specific proposals here, we'll hear some of them in just a moment. Why didn't he just stick with that when he was at Gettysburg instead of saying he was going to sue the accusers and getting into the rigged election once again? He started his speech with that instead of this new contract with the American voter, which probably would have resonated a whole lot better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there are probably two reasons. One is that whenever Trump feels slighted, he will hit back, and he can't really help himself. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't help him in the election, he is going to go back, and whether it's attacking women who have accused him of sexual harassment or worse, he's going to talk about that. I think he really can't help himself. And two, you know, I think he is talking about the rigged election because he is trying to think of an excuse for why he lost. I think he's already preparing for losing. My colleague Michael Warren has a piece up arguing that Trump has already given up. And that's the only explanation, is that he knows he's probably likely to lose, and he's trying to already, you know, come up with excuses for why he lost.
Mm-hmm. The amazing thing about this, too, is that the Democratic candidate certainly is vulnerable. She is vulnerable on many of the revelations that have come from the email revelations, this pay-for-play charge against her. And when you get the latest one over the weekend, that $12 million was given by the King of Morocco? And then she was supposed to speak in Morocco after the donation, and then somebody said, maybe this isn't a very good idea, so they sent Bill and Chelsea to speak. She's vulnerable on this issue, and yet it really is third-page news.
You know, she is. I mean, I think that the Democrats, one of those other things we learned from the WikiLeaks hacked emails is one, I forget exactly who it was, but one Democratic operative writing to John Podesta, a top aide to Hillary Clinton, said that, listen, they were very scared that anyone other than Trump was going to win the nomination, that even Ted Cruz, who is
right,
very strongly to the right and not exactly doesn't have the greatest personality, would be an even money bet against Hillary Clinton. Her unfavorable ratings are just really, really high. The only problem for Republicans is that Trump's are even higher. So
mm-hmm.
We have a really historically unpopular candidate at the top of the ticket, which is why I think you will see a substantial third-party vote, I guess fourth-party vote, with, you know, the Libertarians, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein of the Green Party, even independent conservative Evan McMullen is making a play for Utah right now. He might actually win the state and become the first independent candidate, non-Republican, non-Democrat, to win electoral college votes in nearly 50 years.
Let's talk about down ticket a bit. The Democrats are all over the place with President Obama and Michelle Obama, the First Lady, and Hillary Clinton and others who are trying to get people to vote early and vote for Democrats for the Senate and also for the House. The Weekly Standard has gone through a really good analysis of the Senate races, and an article this week says flipping the House is still a long shot for the Democrats, but Republicans are fighting tooth and nail to maintain their majority in the Senate. You highlight what is called the most crucial Senate race in the Weekly Standard, and that is Nevada. Do you want to spend some time on that?
Yeah, well, Fred Barnes has a very good piece on Nevada right now, a race between Joe Heck, Brigadier General, who was a surgeon, served in the military in Iraq, in a hospital. You know, he was doing pretty well, and then he's really gotten caught up in the crossfire of this, of the presidential election right now, because Heck actually backed off of his support from Trump after this Access Hollywood video came out. And so the polls are kind of all over the place right now. If you look back in just the last couple of weeks, the Democrat, Cortez Masto, has been up by 5 or 7 in a couple of polls. In another poll, they were tied. That was a CBS YouGov poll. And then in Monmouth, the latest poll that came out just last week, it showed Joe Heck, the Republican, up 3 points. And that's really, it's the only race in the country where Republicans have the chance to take over a Democratic seat. I think Republicans really have the work cut out for them, because in the past, we've actually seen that the Democrat has outperformed his or her poll numbers in Nevada. There's been a lot of speculation that's because Hispanic vote, native Spanish speakers, American citizens, nevertheless, aren't being captured as much as they should be in the polling. And so that's why the Democrats are ending up doing better than their polls in Nevada.
Mm-hmm. What will you be able to glean, John, from the number of people who are doing early voting?
You know, I'm of the mindset, I think there are a couple of good points I've read from a few different analysts. One is to not read too much into it. The other, though, is that there really isn't any evidence that the polls are wrong. If we do want to draw an inference from this, and again, it's not a huge number of people, it's that, listen, we don't see any real red flag that would suggest the polls are off right now.
What are you seeing in Wisconsin?
You know, Wisconsin is another really interesting state, my home state. It's a lot of people had kind of written off the Senate race there between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson. But the polls there are just all over the place right now. I mean, you had a poll, you know, Marquette's generally seen as the gold standard in Wisconsin polling, had a really tight race recently in the
last
two, just a 2-point race. Other polls have shown it, you know, Feingold up by as much as 12 or 13. St. Norbert had a big poll with him up in the teens. And this Lowrance College poll showed Johnson up by 5 points, which seemed like a big outlier. So, you know, I really don't know. I think that in general, I mean, both candidates, Johnson and Feingold, are very well known. You know, Johnson's only hope right now is that a significant number of voters don't want Hillary Clinton to have unchecked absolute control. There's a real chance right now that the Democrats could get the House, the Senate, get rid of the filibuster, and end up passing, you know, whatever they liked. If you're a liberal and a Democrat and you liked what happened when Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid had complete control back in 2009, 2010, hey, great news for you. You might get a crack at something like single-payer health care. Democrats are pushing now to get rid of the Hyde Amendment, so that'd be unlimited taxpayer funding of abortion for Medicaid. That's been there for 40 years, but they want to get rid of that now that the Democratic Party has put that in their platform. So, you know, these are just a couple things. You know, maybe you'd end up with immigration reform, or critics would call amnesty. You know, those are the kind of things that you might end up getting a shot at if the Democrats get total control of the House and the Senate.
You think they could get the House, really?
I think there's a real chance.
Do you?
Sean Trendy is, you know, he's a real good analyst at the website Real Clear Politics. And he talks about sort of this Watergate election, where what happened was that people just, you know, they stayed home. The Republicans just stayed home. And so right now you either got to motivate Republicans or independents who don't want Democrats to have complete control. You know, if they're turned off by both Trump and Clinton, you at least got to – the Republicans are trying to make that case right now, is that we need to get these people out to the polls to vote for a check at least to stop Hillary Clinton from getting whatever she wants. You know, so I don't know if that argument's going to be strong enough. Right now, I think that they'll probably be able to hold the House, but again, there are 2 weeks left in this election. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Democrats have more, you know, videotapes and opposition to drop on Trump to try and depress that Republican vote and sweep to complete control.
Mm-hmm. Frank Bruni had an interesting column yesterday saying that Trump's perspective will continue to matter, win or lose, within limits if there's proof that he's commanding a real political movement. Is he?
I think so. I think so. I mean, it's it might not be huge, but you know, Trump got to where he was by being great at commanding TV ratings. You know, he was a celebrity, so he effectively had the market power to go to whichever TV station he wanted. And I think that in exchange for that, many but not all TV stations gave him favorable coverage early on. You know, this is not to single anybody out. Fox, CNN, MSNBC, they all ran Trump speeches live and unfiltered back in August, September, when people were just making up their minds, didn't really know much about the 17-candidate field. Things kind of snowballed from there. And when the Republican rivals finally got around to actually going after him, it was too late. Trump had already won 3 or 4 states, and there's just a snowballing effect. So I do think that, you know, the media, you know, there is an incentive, a market pressure there, where, you know, the media do not always act in the public interest for the public good. They have they want to get ratings. They want to, they want to make money. And so, yeah, I mean, Trump, I don't know. It all depends on what he wants to do. There's been some talk that he himself may start his own TV network with Breitbart.com. They've got the Breitbart CEO as a campaign CEO right now, so there's been some speculation with reason that might happen. And who knows? I mean, I would suspect that Trump loves the limelight, and I don't see any reason why, even if he doesn't start his own TV network, why won't he place a phone call into, you know, the cable news shows at night, every night for as long as he wants to, for the next few years at least, probably, to weigh in whenever he feels like it.
All Things Political with John McCormick this hour, senior writer at the Weekly Standard, and we're welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. I need to tell you or suggest what we're going to talk about because you know what we're talking about. We'd love to hear your phone calls. 2 weeks from tomorrow is the election. So where are we? Where are you? We'll start taking your calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for John McCormick. We start with Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. The Donald Trump, I think, talking down our electoral system, saying it's a rigged system and the people better go to their polls and watch. Our system is so, my wife has worked at our polling area for 18 years, and it's staffed by both Republican women and Democratic women and a few men, but mostly the ladies in our community. And because the system's so decentralized, run in townships all over this country, it seems very unlikely that it be rigged. And I think Donald Trump knows that, but he's, you know, from the school, he has a direct connection to Joe McCarthy through the lawyer Roy Cohn, who's, you know, this idea of telling bold and remarkable lies is a kind of a policy, just like Himmler and other people. This, you tell a lie, you repeat it enough, and some people start to believe it. So I'm concerned that this is can do real harm to our democracy. I think I saw David Brooks say that, you know, societies, we're not as exceptional as we think, and that societies can dissolve into all sorts of horrible things when confidence in our system is degraded. And I think Donald Trump is a very dangerous man in that regard. And, you know, if I would have behaved like him when I was a young person, I would have been probably expelled from school and severely disciplined by my parents. So I don't understand the values voters.
Okay, thank you, Willem. John?
Well, a lot there, I would say, on the him saying that the vote's not going to be rigged because it's decentralized, there are Republicans and Democrats there watching on both sides. You know, that's exactly what Marco Rubio said in a debate in Florida the other week. And he said he hopes that Trump stops saying it's rigged. You know, in Florida, he doesn't believe that there's a 67-county-wide conspiracy that no one's detecting. You know, I do think that there is a problem with potential voter fraud that could be decisive in very close races. You know, I mean, in a race like Florida, where it's 500 votes in the year 2000, the presidential race, or Minnesota with 50 votes or 200 votes, whatever it was, you know, anything could really make the difference there. And so that's why I think you really do want to go, you know, to make sure that we have faith in our electoral process, that we believe in it, that I think that's a good reason for there to be voter ID laws, so that there is no legitimacy to this argument that we don't have. I mean, people are always going to have conspiracy theories, but, you know, if you ensure that people have voter ID, I think that that makes those conspiracy theories very, very hard to spread.
Except that so many people who have studied this say this idea of fraudulent voting, saying that you're somebody else, just doesn't happen. There might be problems, but they might be with machines, or they may be from some politicians who in the past have stuffed the ballot boxes. That doesn't get at that kind of fraud, does it?
No, I'm not aware of any, in the modern era, in the last, you know, 30 years, any allegations of so-called ballot stuffing. I think the question is people who, you know, sometimes there are elections where felons who are not eligible to vote, they end up voting. Non-citizens might end up voting, even though they're not yet fully citizens, they're not supposed to be allowed to vote. And so that's why I think it is important just to maintain our faith in the integrity of the electoral system, that there are, you know, simple voter ID laws that are accommodate people who don't have driver's license and are easy to get. But I do think it's a common sense thing to do.
Let's go to Karen next in La Crosse. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And thanks to your guest. The reason I called in is that you had asked a question, and I don't think the guest really answered it. You asked if Donald Trump has started a movement, or at least has tapped into something, and the guest talked about Trump being able to get some media attention and have his speeches aired, et cetera, and that's true, but there are people who are interested in Donald Trump as president. They're following him, and perhaps there are voices that haven't really been heard. So I'd like the guest to take another stab at that question. Has Donald Trump either started something or tapped into something, and what is going to happen with those people, regardless of the outcome of the election?
Well, I think he certainly has tapped into something, and, you know, what a lot of people talk about is that he's tapped into populism, you know, something that's always kind of been there in America, something maybe embodied more by Sarah Palin. The issues that he has tapped into are issues that Ross Perot and Pat Buchanan in the past exploited, issues like trade and immigration, where there's an elite consensus among Democrats and Republicans. So that creates this ideological opening for another person to exploit that. I don't know how far this goes. I think he's definitely shown that there is an opening for that. One interesting thing, though, is that I've noticed, and why I highlighted just how much the media matters and how much his celebrity matters, is because the other candidates right now in Republican primaries who have tried to imitate Trump directly, they've just gotten wiped out in the Republican primary so far. You have that happen in Paul Ryan's congressional district, a guy named Paul Nehlen. He tried to be exactly like Trump. He was brash. He said he was a businessman. Sorry, he said he was a businessman. You know, he was kind of vulgar. He made a huge deal about trade and immigration. Was really rough around the edges, and he just got stomped something like 70 to 13. Hey, he lost by 70 points. It's like 84 to 14 or something like that. In Florida, the exact same thing happened. There was a guy named Carlos Baruff, businessman, focusing on immigration and trade, and Marco Rubio crushed him again by something like 50 points, even though Trump had just beaten Marco Rubio in the previous election. So you've got to ask these people, obviously, it's not just the issues. You know, this is not a mass movement that is rising up against someone like Marco Rubio, who was for free trade, who was a member of the Gang of Eight group that tried to pass comprehensive immigration reform. So you really can't say that this whole movement is all about the issues. I think it really is much more a personality cult around Trump. Yes, he's tapped into issues. He's also, you know, the so-called alt-right, sort of this nationalistic populist. Even some elements of it are racist. They've gotten really excited by Trump, and he hasn't really done a lot to distance himself from that group.
Thanks, Kieran, for the call. The number is 800-486-8655, and this is All Things Political on the Ideas Network. John McCormick is our guest, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. You mentioned Marco Rubio. Let's talk about that race for a moment. I've read that the National Democratic Party has pulled money from that race. But the New York Times had an interesting editorial yesterday saying that Representative Patrick Murphy, a first-term congressman, is within striking distance of defeating Rubio, and talked about the fact that Rubio can't rely on Cuban Americans as people who vote reliably Republican because they're starting to shift their stances on immigration reform. What do you think of that? Is Rubio not to be beat in that race? And is there a shift in voting among traditional Republican voters over issues like immigration in Florida?
Well, you know, the race in Florida, if you look at the public polling, it's pretty close. The last three polls there have shown it, the last few polls there have shown Rubio plus 5, Rubio plus 2, Rubio tied, Rubio up by 2. So it's a close race down there. You know, what the polls have shown is that while Trump is losing Hispanic voters in Florida, Rubio is actually winning them. So as long as that dynamic persists, I do think Rubio will pull it out. And I would also suspect that these national groups, like the National Senate Democratic, you know, Senatorial Committee, they would know, they would have their own private polling, which must make them pretty confident.
You would think so, yeah.
Money is better spent in other races. They basically, the Democrats have given up on Florida. You know, another liberal writer named Jonathan Chait said, hey, this is a big mistake. You know, Rubio, despite him being damaged by this primary, he's still potentially a really good recruit for Republicans as a presidential candidate in 2020. They'd be a lot safer if they finished him off politically right now, and they might as well make the effort. So there is some disagreement among liberals and Democrats as to whether or not they should still be spending money in Florida trying to beat Rubio.
Sherry in Whitewater, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. First, let me say that your show is my favorite show.
Thanks, Sherry.
I have a lot of respect for you.
Thank you.
But one of the things that I've noticed this election cycle is statements like the one you made right at the beginning of this period, that, you know, that that Hillary is untrustworthy and that these WikiLeaks are damning. And, you know, I noticed that all over the spectrum, no matter what program I'm watching or listening to, that everyone repeats this stuff. I read the WikiLeaks. She just sounds like a politician to me. I have never found her to be untrustworthy. I've always thought she was on the receiving end of just a horrific campaign to destroy her legitimacy for a long, long time, as well as blaming her for her husband's misdeeds. You know, it's kind of a double standard. But what bothers me is that people repeat these things as if they're truisms, as if everybody feels this way. And my husband and I often listen or watch and remark, wait a minute, why aren't they challenging that? That's not true.
Well, there is. Don't you find something a little bit suspicious, Sherry, about what came out over the weekend is, you know, $12 million to the Clinton Foundation, and what do you get? You get Hillary Clinton come to your country and give a speech, and it's sort of like this pay-to-play thing, which is a legitimate question when you have that kind of money, and then the result is you do kind of a favor for somebody.
Well, you know, that's true, but it's also fair to add that 87 to 90% of all the money that goes to the Clinton Foundation is used for aid around the world. So it's not like anybody's profiting from it other than people in poverty who need resources and help.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Sherry, very much for the call. What do you think? Has too much been made about untrustworthy, and so it just becomes the accepted narrative, John?
I mean, this goes back to a lot of different stories throughout Hillary Clinton's public career, why, you know, even so many progressives don't think she's trustworthy. But I think if you were to sum up what is the one story from 2016 that in everybody's mind just that kind of drove that home, it was the issue with the emails. And you've got in one clip, you've got Hillary Clinton saying there were no classified emails. In the next clip, you've got the FBI director saying there were classified emails and classified information. And so just that direct contradiction, even though they didn't prosecute her, even though they said that because it wasn't intentional, they're not going to prosecute, even though many scholars would argue that the law is written so that it doesn't matter whether it's intentional or not. If you're neglectful, if you're negligent, that's what matters. And she did break the law in terms of having those emails and opening up classified information potentially to hackers and such. You know, that was really, to me at least, that's the one issue where everyone can agree, okay, not completely honest.
There's thanks so much for your call, Sherry. Our number is 800-486-8655. We also have email talk@wpr.org and Facebook. Send us messages that way. We have a Twitter message from Jen. I'm finding young women and evangelical women still supporting Donald Trump regardless of any inappropriate behavior. John?
You know, it's a tough call. I'm a Christian. I'm a social conservative, but I care a lot about the Supreme Court. But I don't support Trump because I think that, you know, he would do more long-term damage to the culture that conservatives believe needs to be built up, both in terms of respect for the Constitution, respect for values. And, you know, but what a lot of people are basically saying is they believe the Supreme Court is so important that, hey, you know, our backs are up against the wall with religious liberties on the line, never going to be a chance to, you know, sort of make any gains in protecting the right to life of the unborn if we don't get the Supreme Court seat. And so that's the calculation they're making. And I wonder if, you know, if there were kind of a Donald Trump who was a Democrat, just to be, let's say, hypothetical here, if they believed that the Supreme Court was on the line, that Roe versus Wade and campaign finance reform and, you know, any other, you know, the second, you know, gun control, every single issue that you believe in, you know, if you believe that's on the line with the Supreme Court, you'll probably be willing to overlook a lot of bad stuff. I would think people on both sides. Now I kind of think it's a poor judgment that, again, like I said, I think Trump is, probably likely to do more harm than good to conservatism in the long run, which is why I'm not voting for either Clinton nor Trump. But I understand, you know, where a lot of conservative, especially religious conservatives, are coming from. If you think that this is our only shot at the Supreme Court, that, you know, maybe we can save the Supreme Court by voting for Trump. I understand that. I think it's not the right call, but I understand that tendency.
And do people indeed vote on the basis of who the candidate will appoint to the Supreme Court?
I think so. You know, I don't know if it necessarily pulls up as what's your top issue, but, you know, the Supreme Court, we've made it. I mean, this is maybe a reason why the Supreme Court should be a little more modest and not always jumping in to creating policy about respecting the laws that are passed, is that where it's not obviously unconstitutional, is that, you know, you end up forcing people into making all sorts of weird calculations. You know, they can't just vote for who they think's best. They've got to also factor in, you know, who's going to make the Supreme Court appointments that they agree with.
Let's go to Ken in Shell Lake next. Hello, Ken.
Hello, yeah.
Hi, Ken.
I just had a comment about Donald Trump bringing down the Republican Party.
Okay.
And I'm proud of him for that. Now we only have one political party to bring down, and that is the Democratic Party, because neither party speaks to me. I'm all about decreased government spending and lowering taxes on the middle class, and they all talk about it. Let's help the middle class, but they never do it. And it's part of the reason Donald Trump supporters were so angry, and it's part of the reason Bernie Sanders supporters were so angry. But I'm a pretty focused, issued guy. I would call myself a conservative, a strict conservative. I have to balance my my checkbook at the end of the month. I think the government should have to balance their checkbook. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah,
about
but Ken, let me ask you a question. Are you still there, Ken?
Yes.
Does it bother you that indications are that Donald Trump has paid almost no taxes?
Yeah, that does bother me because he made bad business decisions and he shouldn't be bailed out for that. But on the other hand, I think everybody is paying too many taxes. I mean, think about it. It's not just coming out of our paychecks. Everything we do is taxed. If you add that up over the course of a year, I mean, it's outrageous what we pay. And none of us are going to do well. It's, you know, Thomas Jefferson said it. Taxing a man into prosperity is like him standing in a bucket trying to lift himself up by the handle. It does not work.
All right, and you think Donald Trump will lower your taxes?
No, I don't think he'll lower my taxes. I'm not voting for him, and I'm not voting for Hillary.
Who are you voting for?
I'm going to pick an independent person, or I'm going to write somebody in.
Okay. John.
Well, you know, I think that captures sort of a lot of anger at our political system, but, you know, I don't exactly see what the idea is. With respect to our callers, on some sort of, you know, reverse Marxist idea that we're somehow working towards some sort of utopia where once everything is destroyed, that some sort of glorious political party that will do everything the caller wants will come into power and enact those things. What I see, I mean, Trump is actually going to lead to higher taxation by enabling Hillary Clinton. He's actually, and the Democrats, who are going to be in power in the next couple of years. And Donald Trump has also undermined efforts to cut spending because he is a really kind of demagogued entitlement reform and entitlements, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, biggest drivers of our debt. And, you know, in 10 years, they're going to basically take up all of our spending, that plus the interest on the debt. You know, we won't have any money left for anything else. Everything we'll be spending will be just that. That will be spent just in those entitlements. And so, you know, Trump, I mean, I don't think that he's done anything. I think he's taken the fiscally conservative party and shown that someone who's a fiscal liberal can win it.
Thanks very much for your call. We'll take more in a moment. This is All Things Political, which you hear Mondays at 1 o'clock. And because we're so close to the election, you hear a lot of political talk on our show. And we are speaking with John McCormack. He is senior writer at the Weekly Standard. He is from Baldwin, Wisconsin. So he's a Wisconsin native. And we'll look at more of the Senate races, too, as we carry on here. There is, it's hard to say what's going to happen with the Senate, although the Democrats do stand a pretty good chance of regaining control, although there are a lot of good Republican and strong Republican candidates, some saying not as many strong Democratic candidates, but we'll break down some of the other states as well. Indiana, we'll look at Illinois, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Ohio. I'd like for John to comment on those. And we'll take many more of your phone calls. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for John McCormick. Bill in Sturgeon Bay is next. Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon, folks. Great discussion. I love this. If I could take us back a little bit to the discussion about Donald Trump leading a movement.
Sure.
I don't think he is. I see it as him more riding the coattails of the slippery coattails of not quite the alt movement, alt-right movement, but definitely the right-wing radio movement. And I think a couple things there. The pushback from the right-wing radio is that they know they have a very narrow segment of people that they can keep interested. So if they broaden that, they're going to lose them because they're going to talk to each other and not to them. One of the discussions I had and just this last week was in a restaurant at a table with some business people, and we were talking, I think I embarrassed some of the other people at the table because I was trying to nail down a couple of Trump supporters on why, and it was all negativity toward Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues are just not there. Single issue people, I don't understand. And it seems that once you bring the complexity of an issue out, it really takes the wind out of their sails, which is kind of sad because not only would I'm sure somewhere in there there's a good point, but also I wish they would bring out what they had to say, not just that it's okay to say something bad about somebody else. Mm.
So, Bill, was there an issue that they really cared about or not?
It was just all never Hillary. It mm-hmm. didn't matter. It didn't matter where I went with it. And I guess one other side issue to that, the gentleman that was just on about the taxation issues, well, then, okay, we what has to give here when that less money comes in? And that discussion, seems to be harder to get people involved in.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Bill, for the call. Let's start with conservative radio and with Breitbart and the role that they have played and what they do after this election, John.
Yeah, I think there's a real good point there. I do think that a lot of talk radio, in pursuit of ratings, did sort of normalize Trump. They thought he was at least a useful tool for, sort of beating down the establishment. As to the point of, why are people voting for Donald Trump? I can't believe it. Just to try to think, as someone who doesn't support either Trump or Clinton, to try and put, a liberal or Democrat try and think of them in another person's shoes. Imagine go back to 2004 where there was so many people who were just so passionately believed the Iraq War was wrong. George W. Bush was just a terrible president. And now imagine that instead of John Kerry, you had Donald Trump, who was exactly like Donald Trump, except he opposed the Iraq War, and he thought he was the only chance you had to stop the Iraq War. And so people, when they do see issues that are really important to them, or they just think the other person is just awful, they're sometimes willing to vote for anybody. And so there are a lot of people who dislike Hillary Clinton for reasons of character as well as policy, and I'm sure there are some people who have bad reasons. But so I think that explains a lot of it. We're a very polarized country.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call, Bill. And let's go to Reed in Clintonville next. Hi, Reed.
Oh, yes. As a sustainer, thanks for this opportunity to call. Say, just two quick issues. The first one is Hillary's emails. I believe those emails were classified after they were sent, not prior to. But George Bush's White House, in an article by Nina Burley on September 12th of this year, notes that they lost, George Bush's White House lost 22 million emails, and no one is speaking to that. But my main point is the voter ID. I think Wisconsin is a prime example of the fact that voter ID is not necessary, and that with all the examination of false voting, I think one or two people have been noted as voting falsely, and those were Republicans. But voter ID would be fine if every citizen in the state were that is registered as a state citizen, pays taxes here, etc., were sent a voter ID from Madison gratis and ensured that they received them. But our Republican Assembly and Senate, led by our Republican governor, have tried to, by way of the back door, deny people access to voter ID. And I think that the fact that they have been blatant about this, in fact, we had someone in the state assembly, if I'm not mistaken, who is now a congressman in Washington, and he was gleeful at the fact that voter ID would deny a good number of people access to a voting booth.
All right, let's get a response. John?
You know, I think that, like I said, I think that there probably are ideas for making voter ID even easier to get. You know, that idea that everyone who pays taxes should maybe be able to, maybe they could just check a box saying, I do not have a driver's license, please send me a voter ID law, I'll go in person to get my photo taken somewhere. You know, that sounds like a great idea. I don't think the voter ID should be difficult to get at all. And if there are ideas to make it easier, that'd be great. But I do think it really does help just in determining the legitimacy of elections, because we do know that sometimes the presidency comes down to 500 votes in a state like Florida, or the Senate comes down to 50 or 300 votes in a state like Minnesota. And so, it really isn't just one or two people. I mean, there are documented cases of, again, we're talking thousands, not millions here, not like Trump's talking about, but, where there are people who are felons or who are non-citizens, or, they voted in one state when they're really, truly the resident of another state. So I think that, we want to have integrity in our elections, and we don't want to give legitimacy to these false arguments that the election is rigged. And I think one of the best ways to do that is by having a sensible voter ID law.
Well, we also want to know what the truth is. Where are you getting figures that there are thousands of illegals? Where are these coming from? From everything I've read from people who have studied this, it's really a handful of fraud cases, nothing like thousands.
No, I mean, if you go to the Google Washington Post non-citizen voting, there have been studies done that would put something in the thousands. In the Minnesota Senate race, I forget the exact number, but the number of felons who are not eligible to vote, who cast ballots in an election decided by 50 to 300 votes, was more than that number. Now, we don't know exactly how they voted. Maybe they ended up voting, maybe they ended up voting 500 to 499 for Norm Coleman, and so it didn't make a difference. But, you do want integrity in your elections, and so it's not just one or two votes. I mean, again, we're a country of 300 million people, and so in the cases where people are sending in absentee votes from states where they, they really don't live there anymore, but they want their vote to count more, that happens. I mean, the non-citizens voting, and again, it's just a question of, in a country where there are going to be 130 million votes cast, I mean, are 0.01% going to be fraudulent? Maybe. Maybe it's less than, maybe 0.001, but when you have a presidential election sometimes decided by 0.001%, you really want to make sure every vote is accurate, and you want to have faith in the process.
Let's go to Connie next in Portage. Hi, Connie. Connie, are you there? Okay, Connie is not there, so let us go next to Shannon in De Pere. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Okay, so my question, and this is the mind-boggling part for me of people who are supporting Trump, and for a single issue, more or less, and it seems that a lot of my friends and family are coming down to the single issue of abortion. And the problem I'm having with this is that, Republicans and conservatives in general are just so anti-big government. Get out of our lives, don't tell us what to do with our guns, don't tell us what to do with our homes, our families, vaccinations, whatever. And now, they're saying, but in this one, this one particular issue of abortion, go ahead and tell us what to do with our body. And for me, it just is so, I understand the human life aspect of it, but on the same lines, it's big government telling you, you can't do what you want to do with your bodies. And I'm just curious how you guys feel about that.
Joan.
Well, I would say your argument makes total sense if you believe there's only one body and not two. If there are two bodies, two human beings, then you've got to factor in the competing rights. And if you believe that every human being has the inalienable right to life, whether they're, in the womb or born or old, then you will support protections for life. And I think that that was really, you know, thrown into stark relief in the debate, where I didn't think Trump did a very good job of explaining it. But, you know, there is the issue where, you know, Hillary Clinton, she opposes the national ban on abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy. That's a point where a baby's old enough to feel pain. I mean, listen, there's no difference between a baby who's, they have premature infants now born around 20 weeks after conception, 22 weeks in the way they, some day pregnancies, who go on to live and grow up and become happy, healthy adults or not, but it doesn't matter because they have a right to life. And so, you know, this is, to me, you know, I care about a lot of issues. I care about foreign policy. I care about unions and taxes and everything. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think the most important issue is defending the right to life. And I'm someone who believes in that. And again, like I said, I'm not voting for Trump because I think he'll probably do more harm in the long run to the pro-life cause, the conservative movement, the Republican Party, than not. But, you know, since you asked about the question and why people would say they're against big government, in many cases accept this, well, that's why. And I hope that someday we become a more compassionate society that respects every human being.
Well, and then you've got this very imperfect messenger delivering that very strong anti-abortion message, which he certainly did in debate number three, who's said deplorable things on tape, who said deplorable things about women, certainly, and who has, what, 11 or 12 women now accusing him of assault, and he's starting his speeches with, I'm going to sue him once this election is over. So this whole message can't ring true if you've got somebody who's facing that kind of statement about women, and how can you say that and then say and be believed what you say about abortion? You understand what I'm saying? He's not a perfect messenger for this.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Trump himself, you know, he used to support, you know, late-term abortion for basically any reason, partial birth abortion. He's on tape saying all these things, and he flip-flopped for, you know, really didn't give a good reason why he did. His explanation is that he met some couple and they didn't abort their child, and the child is now, quote-unquote, a superstar, which kind of makes you wonder what Trump would think if the kid had ended up not being a superstar. So, yeah, you know, I think that as Russell Moore, he's the head of the Southern Baptist, one of their arms, and he says, listen, the pro-life movement cannot coexist with this sort of sexism and misogyny. You know, that's not what we stand for. These kind of values, you know, they kind of undermine the whole idea of the right to life and the sanctity of life and building up a culture of life. And I really do believe that. You know, it's not just about passing one law. It's about a long-term changing of the culture. And I think that for Trump to kind of corrupt the conservative movement, the pro-life movement from within, could do a lot of damage. At the same time, I am very concerned, you know, that, you know, Democrats in Congress would, you know, end up, you know, implementing full, you know, unlimited taxpayer funding of abortion for Medicaid. That's what repealing the Hyde Amendment means. That's what they called for in their platform this year. And that's why I do hope that there is some sort of check on Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and on that issue.
Shannon, thanks. Jerry, probably our last caller. We're running out of time. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I'm just wondering what changed in America when Gary Hart was pictured just once with a woman sitting on his lap on a boat. His entire campaign was written off as him being unsuited. And as you were saying about Mr. Trump being accused by so many women, what do you think changed in the American psyche?
I think that there's been, you know, there really has been a change in sort of American morality, whether you think that's good or bad, I'm not going to say, but, you know, we definitely have had a coarsening of the culture, I would call it, a lowering of standards. You know, I don't think that, obviously, the Clintons are, you know, caught scot-free here. You know, Bill Clinton has not just been accused of, you know, adultery, but he's been accused of assault as well. You know, there's a good piece, if you want to Google Hillary and the Rodeo Queens by Andrew Ferguson, talks about...
On that note, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much, John, for the call. John McCormick, our guest, senior writer at the Weekly Standard, a native of Wisconsin. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing All Things Political, and for thanks to Zeb Gozman for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Thanks for all of your calls. Don't worry, we'll have many a chance to talk politics in the next couple weeks. But laughter is what we discuss, hour two, right after the news from NPR.